Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Trash Mix Podcast. We are on episode 7 now, right?
Episode 7, damn. That's right.
We talked about...
Who'd have thunk, huh?
I know. So what have we talked about so far? We've talked about porn.
Porno, which is my favorite topic.
Yeah. Action, crime.
We've done romance.
We got a little romantic this time.
Which, you know, surprisingly had a really good response. I was a little scared that people weren't going to tune into the
episode. Yeah, I mean, I didn't really give a fuck. I was like, you know what? Joey wanted to do this. I wanted to do this. This is our show. Fuck it. I don't care if people don't listen. But no, people liked it.
People actually really liked it. So thank you guys for tuning into that. We also did Killer Dolls.
Killer Dolls with your brother, with,
yeah, that's right. And then now we're moving on.
To what?
Well, we're going to start the new year off with a little bit of a, you know, it's January Giallo, which shout out to Jim from Cinematic Void, because I think he's the one who kind of spearheaded that movement.
Yeah, he's the one that spearheaded it for sure.
So we're going to do a little bit of a January Giallo Mexico style, and then we're going to pair that up with a rape revenge flick.
Mm-hmm. Proto-slasher, too.
Proto-slasher, yeah, you could say that.
So that's kind of why I wanted those two to be together. Obviously, January Giallo, and then something that is predating that, too.
Yeah.
Which is this next movie, yeah.
So let's start off. The first movie we're talking about is Muerte del Chacal, which translates to the Death of the Jackal.
Yeah.
This is 1984, right?
Yeah, filmed in 83 and then, you know, released a year after.
So it's directed by Pedro Galindo III and Pedro Galindo, right? So there's a little bit of confusion there I've seen on the internet about who actually directed this. Pedro Galindo would be like the patriarch of the Galindo Empire, right?
This is the granddaddy of them all, you know. This is Ruben Galindo Jr.'s his grandpa, Ruben Galindo Sr.'s his dad. So yeah, it all begins with Pedro Galindo, and he was a Mexican composer. I think I've mentioned this before in another
show. I think it was episode 2 we talked about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Pedro Galindo, for those who don't know, big time music composer from back in the day. He did Soy Puro Mexicano and La Malagueña. Everybody knows La Malagueña.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So that's what he's mostly known for. So obviously this family has been very talented for years with music, and then during the '60s that's when they dwelled into film. And of course their heirs, like, you know, Pedro III and Ruben Jr. came along and started making films.
And so I also saw that this was produced by Eduardo and Santiago Galindo. So are they part of the Galindo Empire?
Yeah, so Santi is the cousin of Pedro III.
Okay, that makes sense.
So they're all related.
Yeah, so they're all part of the same family. Mm-hmm. And now, is Casablanca Producciones, is that a Galindo production house?
That was one of their production houses. Yeah, okay. They had like many names. There's that one, and then what is it, Galupi or something like that? I forgot. They have a bunch, but that was one of the main ones when they first started in the 80s.
Okay, so, you know, it's a family affair, as I'm sure you guys have now started to kind of take notice in these Mexican movies, where there's a couple families here and there that have kind of taken the Mexican movie industry by storm.
There's Galindos, De Andas, the Martinez, Cardona's, of course, everybody knows Cardona's, but yeah, Galindo's is like, I would rank them maybe second. I would say like top, because Cardona's like the grand, I always say they're the top, they're the granddaddies of Mexican genre cinema.
I think that's a good statement.
And after that, it would be, for me at least, I think Galindo, you know,
yeah,
because they did a lot. Even since they first started, it was just a bunch of comedies, dramas, but very strong dramas that people really liked. And then the 80s come, and then the grandchildren come.
Yeah, I was gonna say the younger Galindos are the ones who kind of spearheaded like the horror stuff.
Yeah,
family, right,
because they were all horror fans for the most part, especially Ruben Jr. So yeah,
they were of age when all like the '70s and
exactly.
And so 80s
they grew up watching. Yeah, they grew up all watching all those, and they're like, yeah, you know, let's make those, you know, since nobody else is, you know.
That makes sense. I mean, you know, they brought the genre into Mexico. I saw that this was shot by Miguel Araña, who people would know, you know, famously shot Don't Panic.
There we go.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a plethora of other titles, but I think the majority of people would know Don't Panic because of, you know, Vinegar Syndrome released it and everything. Mm-hmm. But music by Nacho Mendez. And I got to say, this soundtrack was fucking sick in this movie.
At first, I thought it wasn't him because he often gets credited for the old George music that gets played.
Oh, does he really?
Yeah, okay. But this time it's not. This is actually all Nacho right here.
He's known as like a jazz kind of bossa nova musician in Mexico. And he was in a group called H3O, which is like a progressive jazz group. Which they're actually pretty dope. So I was kind of surprised to see his name. I wasn't really familiar with him outside of this.
His name is Plaster Dick. If you watch more 80s movies, you're going to see his name. Nacho Mendes. But he's often credited for even just bringing in the old George music, okay. Which I thought was weird, but, you know, it is what it is.
I mean, you know, as long as you don't have to credit somebody else, you know, give credit to one person.
Yeah.
Okay, and so it's also starring the Almada brothers, Mario and Fernando, starring Christina Molina, who some people would know as Sexy Vanessa. So for the MILF mature porn enthusiast out there, I'm sure they've seen her, the redheaded bombshell as
honestly,
one of her nicknames.
I was so surprised because I was like, okay, who's Christina Molina? Because, you know, obviously she's really pretty in the movie. And I was like, well, she's really pretty. What else has she been in? And I was like, oh, she hasn't been in that many movies. But when I was searching, I was like, who's Sexy Vanessa? And why is she? And then I looked, I was like, oh, this is the same woman. And I was like, who the fuck is Sexy Vanessa? And then I Googled her. I was like, oh.
Oh.
And then I was like, oh, I have to pay $10.39 to see more cover content.
Well, she's now an OnlyFans.
She does OnlyFans.
Yeah. But like in the early 2000s, my era of watching internet porno, you know, not TMI, but, you know, call it what it is. But she was like in the same realm of like Nina Hartley, right? So she was like, you know, like a little older, you know, more mature, you know, the quote unquote MILF.
But so
she's in here. She's from Argentina. She's not Mexican, but she made like her name in Mexico as like a singer, dancer.
She has a really interesting history. There's an article from, I think, Daily Mail that if you guys ever look into it, yeah, you guys need to read it. It's really interesting, especially about her starting out and then going from that to porno and so forth.
And like how she made the transition into that.
And then she was like married to like a drug dealer, I guess from Colombia too or something.
Oh shit.
Yeah, like in the middle of, you know, everything that was going on for her.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you guys ever want to learn more about her actually, or if you guys want to see her, you guys are gonna have to pay for that.
Or if you want to rub one out, yeah.
Yeah.
$10.39 a month on
something
on
like that. I don't remember the price, but yeah, something like that.
It also stars Olivia Collins as Sally, which this is her first movie role, is what I found online.
Yeah. And like, it's funny because she's barely in it, but she just stands out. And I was hoping to see more of her, but she
doesn't really have a huge role. Is it a huge role? Not necessarily, but she plays, I guess, kind of an important role in this movie, but she's not in there for a very long time.
But she stands out very much, though. That's why I was like, oh, I was hoping she was more in the movie, but yeah, she's only in it for a little bit.
Some people would know her from Violación and Colmillos del Hombre Lobo, or the tons and tons of novellas that she did afterwards. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, she's a very big time familiar face.
We have Lisetta Romo, who's kind of a known Mexican actress, right?
Yeah, another one right there. A really big cast here, like really well-known cast.
You know, there were quite a few actors in here that I thought did really fucking good. And I mean, we can get into it when we start breaking the movie down. But like you said, it is kind of an all-star cast. There's a lot of great players in this one.
Mm-hmm.
We also have Ruben and Fernando Benavides, respectively.
They're very well known in the Rio Grande Valley, so of course they're in it, you know.
And so, you know, okay, you said the Rio Grande Valley. You want to talk about that a little bit? Because I know this was shot in Brownsville, right?
Yeah, so it was filmed around Brownsville, Texas, and then the port of Brownsville, which is obviously not far, and then Port Isabel, which is like a resort beach town type of thing, kind of thing. Like
in Brownsville or in that
area?
Yeah,
in that area, the Rio Grande Valley. And then where the ship location from the movie, it was in Port of Brownsville. And from what I understand, it was a crashed ship. Like, it just crashed there. And so they were just waiting for it to get repaired or whatever. I don't know how that works. So obviously, it was just there for a while.
Yeah.
So then, of course, you know, when the Galindos came, they're like, oh, you know.
Let's just use it.
Let's just use this place, you know. So I guess they asked permission. Maybe, I think. I don't know.
They just snuck on there with cameras
something,
and shit.
Yeah,
I mean, there's not a lot of scenes on there, but the scenes that are on the ship are pretty effective.
Yeah.
So they're maybe like at 1 a.m, like, all right, fuck it, let's get these shots in.
Yeah, it is really late in the night, it looks like, too. So, yeah, so they filmed it in a ship that was wrecked, technically, waiting for repairs, you know.
So do you think this movie was made for the American audience? Because, the characters have American names. It's shot in Texas. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it models itself after a slasher, but it also models itself after Giallo, really.
Giallo.
But it definitely feels like they were kind of aiming towards getting the American crowd in to go see this movie.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, the Galindos were already making movies there in Texas, obviously. to appeal to both audiences on the both sides of the border, so Mexico and the U.S. So, yeah, so I would say it's more for the Americans this time, because this one does feel more American when you think about it.
And but Brownsville was like a hotspot, like that. Why was Brownsville a hotspot?
Because, I mean, without getting too detailed of the history, because it's such a long history, but for the most person, since they settled there in the 70s, the Galindos and the other families, it was just because they had community support, you know.
They could use,
they
like,
they could use resources easily. Like, they don't have to pay anything, or they could pay a little bit and then get, you know, some of the people in the city involved as well.
Yeah, like, established relationships.
Yeah,
with
exactly.
The people.
Yeah. So that's why there's always, like, businesses being shot there, you know, and then they zoom into the name of whatever place, you know.
Yeah,
the strip club gets, like, a show, and then, like, other hotels or something like that, yeah.
Do a little free advertising.
So, yeah, so, you know, they had big support there in the Rio Grande Valley. People were always excited for, you know, for them to make a movie there. And, of course, you know, if they had anything they wanted to put into it, hey, fuck it, you know.
Okay.
Get involved, you know.
I mean, yeah, it definitely adds kind of a value, because sometimes you watch these foreign movies that are obviously made for international market. You're like, dude, this is not,
exactly.
This is not America, bro. Not to say America was the only international market, but you know, obviously a lot of international movie makers were selling.
So this movie was more sold forwards. Yeah, like I said, just both sides of the border, not necessarily one focus, but yeah, it could be for both. You know, America for sure, just because it's so familiar. You know.
Yeah. And so, okay, let's kind of break it down a little bit. Muerte del Chacal, you know, we said it's kind of a January Giallo episode a little bit, and I saw some kind of conflicting, you know, articles online about it. Is it a Giallo? Is it not a Giallo?
Yeah.
And I think this kind of plays like two halves, right? So I think the first half is really Giallo adjacent.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And the second half turns more into like a procedural slasher type of movie.
Yeah.
And we say that because the killer, and hold on. Before we get any further, are we going to spoil this for the listeners, or are we not going to spoil it?
I mean, they're going to watch it somehow, some way. And then it's better if we do speak about what happens. So, yeah.
But we don't want to say the twist, right? Like, I mean, we could talk about it without naming names for the twist, right?
Yeah, I guess we could do that.
Okay,
we'll do that, yeah.
All right, so we'll do it that way then. Okay, just so that we don't spoil it later on. Okay, so the first half, like we said, is kind of like a giallo because the killer, you know, he's dressed in all black. Mm-hmm. He's got the black gloves. You don't really see it. You see his face. All you see is like a shadow figure.
Yeah, and he's wearing a hat too. So immediately when I saw that, I was like, this is like a giallo.
So he looks, for those who are giallo fans, he looks like the killer in Blood and Black Lace, just without like the white like nylon face mask or whatever. His face is always kept in the shadows.
Yeah.
Let's kind of get into it. The movie starts off, you know, like you said, in the port of Brownsville, right?
Yeah, port of Brownsville, that ship.
Yeah, and I don't know if there were two sailors or just two dudes with their girlfriends that show up on this ship.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're you know, trying to find a little hideaway to kind of mac it with their girls and run into a couple of Dobermans that set them up for failure.
Yeah, and that's when our killer comes out.
And that's when you get like the first kind of glimpse of who not who the killer is, but how he attacks, because he uses these dogs throughout the movies as like weapons for like his little henchmen almost.
Yeah, they're like finding victims for him basically.
¿Escuchaste eso?
No, no hay nada.
No.
Amor.
They incapacitate them so that he can come and finish the job. He doesn't have to exert himself too much, right?
That's true, yeah.
And then it kind of cuts into the second scene which I thought was actually really effective. It's like outside of a motel, and she was a prostitute, right? She was leaving the motel, and the killer kind of stalks her a little bit. She's walking by like the docks or something, and he stuffs her into a locker. Was it a locker or like a
storage locker?
It kind of reminded me of the scene in Halloween. Was it Halloween 2 when he's stalking the security guard is like kind of going through the
Yeah.
So if you know that scene, that this is kind of what that scene is like. She's walking by a bunch of like locker storage doors, and he stuffs her in and just stabs the shit out of her with his cane, which is kind of another, you know, callback to the Giallo, because a lot of instruments that were used in killing were kind of like, you know, deceptive, where it's like a cane, or you think it's like a fucking handpiece, but it's really like a claw or a knife or sword.
This one's like a sword, if I recall.
Yeah, it's like a long, it's like his cane long. That, you know, it comes out and he uses it as a sword to kill his victims, right? And then we get introduced to Fernando Almada, who's, you know, the second brother of the Marion Fernando Almada. And he's like a Navy captain or something?
Something like that. Yeah, he's like a really important person in the Navy.
He's he oversees the docks there. Is kind of what his character is.
Yeah, he barely got the position there because he came from San Diego before that.
That's right. Yeah. So he definitely was like a Navy guy. And he's like has a training montage that looks like Rocky.
Oh, you know? Yeah. He's just wearing like a gray suit.
He's all sweaty on the chest and shit. And that's when he runs into Mario Almada, whose name is Sheriff Bob.
Sheriff Bob.
Bob, yeah, not Bob. Like Bob. Bob. And that's kind of where the mystery starts to take place. So once Sheriff Bob, you know, shows up on the scene, he's like, all right, what the fuck is going on? We got all these girls that are dying out here. We got dead people on a ship. Mm. Now he's tasked with finding this killer.
Yeah, and his brother gets involved too. He wants to help out as well.
Yeah, well, I guess it's because he kind of oversees the docks. Mm-hmm. Sheriff Bob needs his help because he doesn't have jurisdiction to investigate at the docks, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of where their partnership turns in, and he kind of leans on Roy to help him with figuring out, you know, who the fuck is this killer.
Yeah, so Bob and Roy, it's typical, like, Almada, you know, they're, like, going after these people that they think could be the killer. So there's, like, a couple action sequences.
Yeah.
There's, like, a chase with a boat.
Yeah, oh,
like,
yeah.
So stuff like that, you know.
So one thing that I saw when watching this, there's a lot of kind of, I don't want to say homages, because I don't know if that's what they were intending to do, but there's a lot of similarities to other movies. In the scene when Sheriff Bob goes to a local dance club to kind of start his investigation, because they tell him, hey, there's a strange guy at this club that you might want to look into. And I think it was just kind of an excuse to go get a couple babes into the movie. But,
yeah, because there's like a stripper scene. Right
there. Yeah. And in that scene, there's a scene where he goes upstairs to talk to one of the strippers. Mm-hmm. And it's like it's almost like a Black Christmas type of scene, right? So like when he's looking through the plastic covering,
that is true. Yeah, I didn't think about that. Good call.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, holy shit! Like, I don't know if it was a direct reference, like if they were influenced by it.
I would think it is. Yeah.
Really good scene. Yeah. And it's kind of like you get a sense of the brutality of the killer.
Because this is when he throws her out, right? He kills her and then he throws her out into the stage.
Throws her out from like the second story glass window, and she lands on the stage where another girl is in the middle of her dance routine. Yeah. That's when they are like, okay, we we didn't find the killer here. We didn't find any answers. But there's another guy on the docks who I thought he kind of looked like Ramon Ayala. I don't know if you.
I don't really remember, but
yeah, I was watching. Oh, shit, looks like Ramon Ayala.
Se conocieron hace tiempo. Él la frecuentaba mucho. Venía muy seguido por aquí, pero Jack no es el tipo de hombre que. Pobre Mary.
¿Dónde podremos encontrarlo?
Creo que tiene un barco anclado en el muelle.
¿Cómo se llama el barco?
El Delfín.
He's the one with the cane, right, I think?
Yeah, so yeah, he's the one that they were trying to find at the strip club, but they couldn't. And he's the one who lives at the docks, which is why Sheriff Bob needed Roy's help to go there. And they go onto his ship. He's got a bunch of like nudie magazines plastered all over his wall. Yeah. And so then they try to get him, and that's when you had said,
yeah, it's like police protocol type of thing. They're chasing him. There's a boat, you know, guns.
Yeah, it's a chase, yeah. But it's a boat chase, yeah. Which I thought was actually fucking sick. You could see Mario Almada just like on the boat, like yeah, like super machismo, and then fucking crashes into the side of a mountain and fucking blows up.
Yeah, so you're just like, damn, this is just like a callback to their action films.
and it was the first red herring of the movie. Like, you think this is the killer, but no, sorry, guys. This is not the killer. Because it turns out that he was just hiding drugs on his boat, and that's why he ran away
from it. Exactly.
So, you know, check him off the list, because now you got to go find somebody else. And this is when Olivia Collins comes into play.
Yeah, so they're like, she's introduced at a party, right, at the house, Bob's house. Yeah,
yeah. Bob is having like a little dinner party, invites his brother Roy, and this is when Olivia Collins walks in, of course Roy looks at her like, oh my gosh, she's so, and of course the same thing, she looks at him like, damn.
Yeah, they're very into each other.
Oye, Joan, ¿qué apuestas el hermano de tu esposo? ¿Cómo es que no me lo habías presentado? Ay, Sally, tú nunca vas a cambiar. Qué bonita noche.
Sí. Desde hace tiempo no habíamos tenido una como esta. ¿Eres de por aquí?
Soy de California. Hace 6 meses que estoy viviendo aquí y trabajo como modelo. Soy vecina de tu hermano. ¿Y tú dónde vives?
En el puerto. No es un lugar tan bonito como este, pero es muy tranquilo.
Y muy romántico. Alguna vez he pasado por ahí, pero nunca he podido detenerme.
Sí, lo es.
Bueno, ya que la noche es bonita y el puerto tan romántico, ¿qué te parece si me llevas a dar una vuelta?
¿Qué? ¿Ahora?
¿Por qué no?
Y la reunión, los invitados, mi hermano.
Desde que se inventaron los pretextos.
Nada, nada. Conozco muy bien ese refrán.
So then they decide to kind of, she's like, all right, let's get out of here, you know, like, fuck this party. Let's go have our own little party. And he takes her to the boat.
Yep, the infamous
boat. The infamous boat. And they get stalked by the killer. And this is kind of like the turning point. Because we find the identity of the killer at this scene.
Yeah, at this point, you're already like, oh shit, this is the killer.
Yeah, so they get to the boat, and you know, it's actually a really good scene. There's like the music on there, which I'm sure medium music cues or something. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of, you know, trying to find a place to hook up in this boat, and then the fucking killer shows up, and there's like hanging hook. It almost looks like a boiler room dungeon from like a Freddy Krueger movie or something.
Something like that, yeah. Or Texas Chainsaw Massacre or something. I don't know.
Yeah. But
yeah.
And so that scene happens, and then it pivots, right? Mm. It kind of pivots to back to Sheriff Bob, and now he's like, fuck, my brother was, you know, attacked. Mm. You know, my brother's girlfriend was attacked. And now he's like, I really got to figure out who the fuck this guy is.
Yeah.
And that's when we learn the kind of the backstory of Roy, that he was, you know, in San Diego.
And then something similar happened over there, too. So he was like familiar with, you know, things like that happening.
Yeah. And I guess he was like, I don't remember if they said he kind of was part of like an investigation over there about the killings that were happening in San Diego.
Something like that. Yeah.
But yeah, so then they're like, all right, well, now Roy really needs to be involved because he has firsthand experience trying to catch some kind of sex maniac killer in San Diego in his time there.
Yeah.
So that's when they set up like this whole ploy of, all right, we're going to go undercover. We're going to, you know, try to lure this killer in with one of our deputies who's Lisetta Romo. She's Sergeant Garcia.
I think it was Garcia.
And she's, you know, she, you know, very, very beautiful woman, you know. Yeah. So, you know, no surprise they would try to use her. So they dress her up all scantily and she's prowling the streets of Brownsville trying to get his attention.
Yeah, the port of Brownsville.
And so I guess this is kind of where the movie turns. It turns from a giallo into the procedural part. Mm-hmm. And there's actually really dope scenes in this this part of the movie where it's like it's nighttime. There's fucking there's like fog coming in from the from the bay or whatever. Yeah. And you get a lot of shadow shots of the killer who's out there. You know, he's got his top hat on. He's dressed in all black. He's got his cane. Like,
yeah, you see more of him right there.
Yeah, really fucking good shots there. And yeah, and that's when we discover who the killer is.
I guess it's interesting. I mean, I kind of knew already.
You know, I don't want to set people up after if they listen to this and go watch it. I don't want to steer them into thinking who they think it might be. You know, but if you pay close enough attention, you can probably figure out the twist. It's not too crazy of a twist.
Yeah,
but
but yeah, so if you go in it without really knowing nothing, you're like, oh shit.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it can take you by surprise when the moment hits because you don't really expect, even though you might think you know who it is, you don't really expect it. And I think that's kind of like the part that I thought really kind of leaned into being a giallo, right?
Yeah.
The twist. Uh-huh. And I don't know. I mean, I thought it was effective. But the only problem with, you know, I guess divulging who it is at this moment is now you have a second half of a movie to kind of unravel. So how do you move forward after you've already identified who the serial killer is?
Yeah, basically the other half is just like, the killer's out again. And then you find out why the killer's like this. And it's pretty interesting stuff. I thought it was very interesting.
Well, I mean, it's basic, but I mean, at the same time, a lot of these like sex maniac killer movies, you know, giallo movies, it's always some kind of sexual trauma involved or some kind of odio complex where, you know, a kid is in love with their mother or they saw their mom, you know, cheating on their dad or saw their dad, you know, it's always some kind of violence and sex intertwined. And that's kind of triggered their own little... I guess their own little mania of whatever. So the second half, I think, kind of loses a little bit of steam.
I could see what you mean, yeah.
Because at that point, you already know who the killer is. Now it's like, all right, now what? Like,
now it's just like, okay, he's escaped.
Yeah.
After Bob, you know, goes from there.
Yeah, so the killer, you know, they figure out who it is. They arrest him, but he doesn't go to prison. He goes to a mental hospital.
Yeah,
and there's a couple cool scenes there. Like his escape scene is funny, but it's also pretty. I think it was executed pretty well.
Yeah,
the killer escapes his room by kind of tricking his guards into coming in. Kind of like this scene reminded me of Terminator 2, even though it was before Terminator 2. When Sarah escapes her her institution, it was kind of resembled that scene, I thought. But now the killer wants revenge. The killer wants to kill everyone who arrested him, caught him, and sent him to the mental hospital. And there's a couple cool scenes after this. The killer shows up to Bob's house, him and his wife.
Back to the boat.
Yeah.
Always that boat.
Yeah. I mean, the boat is going to play an important part of the movie because it's literally the first thing you see is this fucking boat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where he lures them back and he tries to kill Bob and his wife. Right. Mm. And I guess that's really when we learn why he was the way. He's kind of you know, his whole time he's kind of like the killer in 10 to Midnight, where he's like, it's because of this, you can't stop me.
Yeah.
And again, you get these really cool fucking scenes of this boat, like boiler room style boat, where they're going up and down these stairs, and it's really dark, and the soundtrack, I thought, was real. It's more soundscapes than soundtrack, but...
Yeah, this is not a stage, by the way. This is inside the boat.
You can tell right away. Absolutely.
That's what I liked about it. It's like, it's actually in the fucking boat.
And, yeah, so, you know, they're trapped on this fucking boat. Then the killer actually attacks Sheriff Bob. Mm-hmm. They get into a little scuffle, and then they go... flying overboard into the water where the killer drowns,
allegedly.
And then it cuts to, you know, I don't know, I forgot how many weeks later or whatever, but Sheriff Bob's at his house with his beautiful wife, sexy Vanessa. And she kind of, she has a premonition.
Yeah. That he's still out there, yeah, the killer.
That the killer escaped the water, and he's fucking going after and killing him again. Yeah. And it cuts to like a dream sequence where he stabs the shit out of which I thought was kind of a crazy scene. Like I think that was probably the nastiest scene of the movie, I would say.
Yeah, I would think so too, actually. Yeah.
And you know, of course, she just wakes up. Ah, it was a dream, whatever.
Yeah, and then they play this music, and you're like, okay, is there going to be another movie?
¿Qué te pasa, mi amor? Tranquilízate. Debes haber estado soñando. Tranquila, ya.
Sí. Creo que fue una pesadilla.
Ya, ya. Tranquila, ya. Ven. Ya, ya.
Is there going to be another movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is. I was like, yeah, there is. So then, we're not going to get into it, but yeah, there is a sequel. So if you're like wanting more, then you got to watch the second movie, which is called Masacre en Rio Grande, Chacal Part 2. Literally, that's what it's called. Chacal Part 2 at the bottom. To finish off the story. Or you don't have to, really, if you don't want to.
You know, look, I'm going to say this. I think I actually liked Massacre in Rio Grande better.
That one had a lot more kills, I think,
too. It was... So, it no longer plays as a giallo. This is like a straight-up slasher movie. But it's so fucking gory. Like,
yeah.
I mean, the first scene, he's like drilling some dude's fucking face
in. Yeah, I even forgot about them until recently when I revisited it. I was like, damn, I forgot how violent this movie is.
It's so violent. And so that was the... When you sent it to me, that was the first time I had seen Chacal 2.
Yeah.
And I fucking loved it, honestly. It's really good. I would say that they're both kind of equal. Like,
yeah.
The only issue I would have with Chacal 2 would be... that it's kind of like Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, where it's just like a rehash of everything that just happened.
For the most part, yeah.
You know, they just added a couple kills, a couple characters, but it's literally like, all right, it's the same format.
It's the same format, that is true. It even ends similar in a somewhat way, too. You know?
Well, that's,
it ends in water again.
It ends in water, and it kind of ends... kind of open-ended again.
Yeah,
like,
another open-ended.
Yeah, like if true. They were going to make a Chacal 3.
Which there wasn't.
Sadly.
Yeah, but there is a remake that not a lot of people know. I don't know. Did you watch it?
I did watch the remake. Yeah,
Chacal
yeah.
del Puerto. So funny enough, so there is a remake, which was in 96, called Chacal del Puerto. This wasn't by the Galindos. This was by Gilberto de Anda, who actually wrote the first movie, uh-huh. the Chacal. So it was interesting to see that. And that one, it's cool, but... it was still missing that charm from the first movie.
Yeah, it's kind of rough around the edges.
Yeah, this is straight up like low budget. And it's like Veracruz, I think. Yeah, they didn't film it in Texas.
Was it Veracruz? I think it was Veracruz.
Yeah, it was Veracruz, yeah.
But, you know, if they can find it, if you guys can find it, I think it's worth a watch. I mean, it's kind of cool to kind of, you know, I guess close that that loop of the Chacal series.
Yeah, there's a Chacal series. yeah, I love the first movie. The first movie is like one of my favorites. That's one of the first ones I remember watching as a kid with my dad too. So it's a really close to heart, I guess you could say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely one of those movies. So I fucking love it.
And I loved it because, like you said, it's kind of a giallo adjacent, which I love giallo movies.
Yeah, like later on down the line, that's when I started realizing, like, this seems more like a giallo.
Yeah.
Not so much a slasher. It's straight up giallo. And then sure enough, other people caught on that I saw in reviews. They were like, yeah, this is like a giallo sort of.
So here we go. The first Mexican giallo.
I would think so, yeah. Because I can't think of another movie like this that predates all this stuff, you know. Other movies, there have been movies about killers, you know, hiding in the shadows or whatever the fuck, you know, in black. But
not one, as formulaic as like
yeah,
a giallo.
Yeah, Chacal. This one definitely had all the traits as a giallo would have.
The black club. I mean, the only thing they were missing was some J&B, but I'm sure in that that yeah. scene inside the club, they were probably drinking tequila or mezcal or something. That, yeah. Yeah.
There might have been a J&B bottle. But yeah.
The J&B enthusiasts, you guys can watch it and dissect each scene and see if you can find it. I liked it because there was, like I said, there was a lot of callbacks. Well, I don't know if I want to call them callbacks, but a lot of references or slash homages to other horror serial slasher movies of the time. And one thing that I thought kind of separated it a little bit in my eyes was that I feel like the killer kind of had like a Frank Zito maniac vibe to him.
Yeah, I would think so.
Like he's
yeah.
like there's scenes where he's like super sweaty and gross and like
yeah, the killer does sweat a lot.
No, yeah, it's just I don't know. I watching it, I was like, all right, this movie's fucking sick. I started writing down all the things that I thought were references, and I was like, I think the general population would fucking love this movie.
Oh yeah, if this gets on Blu-ray, which it may or may not, as far as I know, but you know, if it does, yeah, this is gonna be a favorite for a lot of people. I think.
Yeah, I can definitely see that, and. It would be dope to have Massacre in Rio Grande as like a...
Like an add-on.
Like an either a special feature or maybe its own release, like as like a double set
like
or something.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Intrepidos Punks, but...
Yeah. Just the one, it's fine, you know?
Yeah, I mean...
Because I know people are going to love this first movie for sure.
Yeah, I think it was fucking dope. Okay, so let's move on over here to Ultraje.
So this is the second movie, which is a rape revenge and then a proto slasher, kind of like I told you beforehand. I was like, yeah, I kind of want to throw this one in there with Chacal, just because it's kind of a proto slasher. Not so much a giallo, but, you know, it does have the, you know, killer point of view scenes and so forth.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, again, like I think horror fans, if they watch this and dissect it a little bit, they'll find some scenes that are pretty cool references to other horror movies. And maybe I was kind of looking for them, so I saw them, but I think horror fans would definitely find some a lot of worthwhile
slasher
watching
fans,
this movie. Yeah.
Rape revenge film fans, they're going to love this film.
Okay, so Ultraje, that translates to what?
Outrage.
And so this is a 1977 movie, right?
Yeah, they shot it in 76 and then a year later, 77.
And so it runs at a brisk 73 minutes, right?
It is very short. Yeah. Yeah. I was like surprised. At first I thought maybe the copy I had was short, but no, this is the whole movie.
And those who have been listening and following along or those who already know me know that 73 to 77 minutes is the perfect runtime.
Right, yeah.
And it really does because you kind of breeze through this. So it was written and directed by Raul Fernandez.
Yeah, very interesting filmmaker that not a lot of people talk about, especially in Mexico. He has like a really big history. He was born in 1923, and then his grandfather, like when he was like a little kid, gave him a film projector, you know, just to play with or whatever. And he really loved it. Like he just played all kinds of little movies on it. And his uncle, it turns out, was a set maker for Hollywood films.
So okay.
Yeah, so he was like already, you know, exposed to film stuff, you know,
yeah,
so
young
age. And then his parents, they opened up like a theater or like a projection room to show movies in Oaxaca.
Is that where he's from, Oaxaca?
No, he's from, I didn't note that down, but he's not from Oaxaca, but he's lived in Oaxaca for a while, what I recall, yeah. And then he went, when he was like a teenager or like a young adult, he studied radio and film in LA. Then he came back to Mexico as a film exhibitor. Then that's when, in 66, he made a movie called La Carcachita. It's like a family movie.
Uh-huh.
And then who knows, and 10 years later he makes this rape revenge film.
So, I mean, is there a reason why it took 10 years for him to do another picture? Or
I think what it is, I mean, he was already making movies after that, you know, but it's just like when 77 came, that's when he started his career in genre stuff. You okay. know, like a lot of really serious stuff, you know, action and like dramas, horror and so yeah. forth. Yeah. Ultraje was one of his first ones into that stuff.
And kind of crazy, if this is your first genre movie, I mean, you got some fucked up things going on in your mind.
I mean, this was American co-production, so it wasn't all his idea.
I wonder if the American version was like the drama side of it, or was it the rape revenge?
I think it was the drama and then the rape too. Yeah. The drama for sure, because the way it starts, it's like in LA, if I recall, Hollywood. Because it doesn't look like Mexico.
It doesn't look like Mexico.
Only when they go to... Yeah, we'll get to it.
Yeah, we'll get to it. Okay, and so this was produced by Raul Fernandez as well, right?
Yeah, he directed and produced it.
And I saw that Kathy Lopez was credited as a producer in this. Who's that? Because I only saw one credit for
her. I couldn't find nothing either, so who knows? Probably just somebody he knew, maybe. I'm assuming,
Okay, and it was shot by Victor Gaitán, who shot some Santo Contra Las Lobas, Arrecife Mortal, and some like a Chicano documentary about like Chicano murals and stuff like that. I've never seen anything else that he shot, but it's important, I guess. Starring none other than Troy Donahue.
Yeah, that caught me by surprise. I was like, Troy Donahue, the Summer in Place guy?
Yeah. Who, you know, he had a very, very solid career in like the late 50s into the 60s. Yeah. And
Teen Idol. You know, all the girls wanted him.
Yeah.
And then the late 60s, that's when his career kind of went downhill, kind of with his life too, because his personal life kind of fucked up his career too.
Well, so, what was I don't know too much about Troy.
So, yeah, I was reading about him the other day too, because I wanted to, like, you know, because a rehash of everything. So what it was is, of course, you know, Warner Brothers was already in decline, I guess, for that kind of stuff for him, at least, you know, Teen Idol, you know, All American Boy image or whatever.
Blonde, blue eyed guys.
Yeah, you know. And then at the same time, he was already, you know, kind of dwelling in alcohol, drugs, wanting to party all the time, owing money to, like, you know, like, not paying tickets and shit like that. Yeah, so he was always just getting himself into some trouble. So yeah, he was always losing money, didn't have his contract with Warner anymore. So that's why when you look at his filmography, he's just making all kinds of random movies.
Just needed to get paid.
Exactly. That's how I was like, why is he in Ultraje? And then I was like, oh, that makes sense. Somebody probably like offered him the role. They're like, hey, do you want to be in this Mexican co-production? Like, yeah, fuck it. I need money for some coke and weed. Because then he was living that like hippie kind of life too, I noticed too.
Oh,
he was
shit.
Kind of a... What is that word for hippies? It's like the whatever life. I don't know.
Hippies.
No.
They're all the same.
I always forget the term for it. But anyways, he was just, you know, living that kind of life, you know.
Free-spirited
and, you know, just wanted to, you know, do his own thing.
Wow.
But he still wanted to, you know, work in film, you know. So he was just taking whatever he could get.
Yeah.
And this is already in the 70s, so again, whatever he can get.
Well, yeah, and whatever he can get, he definitely got something out of this one.
And then
one,
you notice in the movie, he just does not look great. Like, he looks very janky. Like, even though he's supposed to be, like, a professor, he does not look like a professor.
Oh, no, not at all. Yeah, no.
Just out of it. Like, he's definitely, he's definitely had some rough days.
He definitely doesn't seem like...
this is not the Summer Place guy.
Yeah, because, so this is, like, again, this is another tale of two movies, I think. You know, the first half is, like, a drama. The second half is where we get into it.
Yeah.
I agree. He does not look like he's the type to be like a professor or lovey-dovey.
Like a older guy wanting to party.
So I didn't really know anyone else as far as the cast in this, but you know, I see we have Alicia Encinas. Played Kathy in this movie,
beautiful,
his love interest.
Oh yeah, beautiful.
Oh yeah, she's absolutely gorgeous. Yeah.
Yeah, so she was in a lot of movies by then. I think this is maybe her fifth, sixth, I don't really recall, but I know she's already been in movies by then, you know.
Okay, and Mexican productions.
And then after that, from then on, she was in another bunch of movies after. So if you look at her filmography, it's pretty big.
Yeah, and then we also have Roland Ferlini, which is a pseudonym for...
Raul Fernandez. And that's Raul's son. The director's son.
It's a family affair. Again, look, Mexican movies, man. It's all a family affair.
Yeah, Rolando got his son, you know, Raul involved. And then for those that want to know more about Raul Fernandez. And you might even know who he is if you're into Mexican movies. He's the guy that married Rosa Gloria Chacoyan.
Oh, yeah.
Who did the Lola de Trailera movies.
Uh-huh.
And then the Guerrera Vengadora movies. You know, all those movies. And, of course, the dad was involved, Raul.
Yeah,
he was directing,
yeah,
producing them. So, yeah, this was like the beginning, too, for them.
The beginning, of the start of an empire.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Laura Ferlo, who played Laura in this movie, who's kind of like the Kathy's classmate, I guess. Right?
Oh, yeah, something like that. Yeah, like a really small role.
Yeah, really small role. I mean, you know, she shows up in the beginning and at the end.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's right.
Because there's really only like six main players in this movie.
Yeah, that's so funny. It's the cast is so short, but they all come back at the end.
Yeah.
Basically.
Okay, so let's break it down. There is, you know, one thing I noticed, you know, there's a little bit of confusion on the credits, right? So, this opens up with a beautiful orchestration. There's like, you know, you can see two little people running in the distance.
Wearing white.
Wearing white, yeah. And the music is credited to George Gonzalez, but then at the end of the movie, it's credited to Mike Larraguivel. So I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's the same person or they're just making fake names. whoever did the music did a great job because I thought the especially this like the opening title card. Yeah, that music was great.
Yeah.
Raul Fernandez is credited as Rex Bader as the writer.
I noticed that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what's going up with that. I don't even know how to pronounce this name. Uwe Grunwald? Is that a? I don't know, but they got credit as second unit cameraman, as well as cast members.
As I remember, there is Canadian people involved too in the movie, so that could be some of the Canadian people.
Is that a Canadian name? Uwe Grunwald?
Yeah, French Canadian maybe.
Maybe.
Because there is French Canadians, Mexican co-productions, so I know this is kind of one of them too. But it's mostly American and Mexican.
Okay.
But there is some Canadians involved.
All right, well, maybe they were Canadian.
That's probably what it was, yeah.
Okay, so with all that aside, all the confusion there, this movie opens with Troy Donahue kind of teaching a class about, like, I don't know if it was like impressionist artists or something like that.
Yeah, he's like an art teacher.
Who's basically not a real teacher to begin with.
Yeah.
fucking liberal arts degrees over here. No disrespect, guys. But
that's probably why he picked the role, now that I think about it.
It was probably easy for him, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, he's called Daniel in the movie, by the way.
Professor Daniel, who calls out Kathy for not paying attention and kind of like really fucking drags her down in the class.
It's weird, because wasn't Kathy like drooling over him basically? She's just like staring at him, right?
Yeah, kind of. And then he kind of just completely disrespects her, tells her that she needs to just leave the class. Like, she's not really into art,
yeah,
and she'll
like
never be an artist.
Yeah, he was such a dick. He's like, yeah, get out. And then one of the classmates is like, hey, that's not a way to talk to a lady.
And he's like, shut the fuck up. You get out of here, too. Yeah, you're a fake hunter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because he's wearing hunting clothes in the class.
He's like, why are you late? That's not what a hunter wears.
Yeah.
So he starts off on a sick one, just fucking ragging everybody.
No fue solo a la técnica de los artistas a la que se opusieron los críticos, sino también a los temas escogidos por estos artistas. Parece que todo lo que se requería del pintor era imitar la naturaleza, y la gran mayoría aceptaba esto, lo cual era absurdo. Sin embargo, en Inglaterra, dos pintores llamados Constable y Turner tenían algunas ideas impresionistas. Por ejemplo, en el barco de vapor en la tormenta, donde Turner utilizó el impresionismo. Al mismo tiempo, había un pintor en París de nombre Monet, a quien le era familiar la obra de Turner. Juntos, ellos... Kathy.
Sí, profesor.
He visto claramente que no pones la debida atención, que estás en otro mundo. Tal vez sería mejor que no asistieras a clase por algunos días.
profesor. Esa no es forma de tratar a una señorita.
Ah, el cazador. Edward, creo que lo único que debe interesarte es llegar a clase a tiempo.
Vengo de una cacería, por eso no pude llegar temprano, profesor. Le diré, no quería perder su clase, pero ahora no regresaré jamás.
But then we learn that Daniel kind of has like a secret fling with Kathy. Yeah. So it's like, what the fuck?
It was so weird.
So I don't.
The first time I watched, I'm like, what is going on in this movie?
I think maybe he was jealous that she was out with I can't even remember his name, the fake hunter and Laura.
Oh yeah, she was out with them because they're like her, you know, her friends.
Yeah, class, they're classmates.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, he got like some kind of jealousy involved. Yeah.
And it kind of, and then we kind of get like a little flashback onto why he's so kind of bipolar manic, is that he had like a major accident that caused head trauma, but not physical head trauma, physiological head trauma.
Yeah, a little different thing.
Yeah, he suffers from psychological harm and some other shit. I forgot. He was like talking to some doctor, and the doctor's like, "Look, man, ain't nothing wrong with you, man. You're just crazy. Like, you need to get on some pills or something." And so he apologizes to Kathy.
He goes to her house.
Yeah, goes to the mom, like, "I need to speak to Kathy." Mom's like, "Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
come on in."
Like, this, the whole movie's just weird. It's like, what? It's so unrealistic, but yeah.
And so keep this in mind, guys. This is like this is still the first 5 to 10 minutes of the movie. And so he goes, apologizes to her. "I love you, baby. Like, I get these mood swings and blah, blah, blah."
Yeah, and keep in mind, he's much older than Kathy. Okay.
Yeah.
He's definitely like, what, 20, 30 years older, maybe?
Oh, definitely.
He's definitely much older than her. Yeah.
And he basically tells her, like, I was being mean to you so that you would hate me and break up with me. And kind of sounds like my ex-girlfriend, but crazy. Who does that? I don't know, man. I don't get it.
Kathy. Quisiera que me disculparas. Lamento mucho lo que hice. Mírame. No entiendes que traté de herirte para que me odiaras y así yo pudiera odiarte en lugar de seguir amándote.
Dani, te amo tanto. Mucho. Mucho.
¿Estás segura?
Pero, ¿por qué no quieres amarme?
Hace mucho tiempo tuve un accidente. Los doctores dijeron que había una lesión cerebral. Pero hoy descubrí que no es así. Temía que mi personalidad y actitudes cambiaran.
Mi amor.
Tenía miedo de hacerte miserable.
Sería imposible. Te amo demasiado. Me propongo hacerte muy feliz.
And so she basically tells him, I love you too much, and I'll deal with your dual personalities. You know, I need you in my life. Mm-hmm. Super sappy romantic drama. It almost feels like a made-for-TV drama. The first like 30 to 40 minutes of this movie. So then they agree. Fuck it. I'm gonna quit teaching and let's fly to Acapulco.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they even shot in Acapulco, but I mean, I know that scene definitely when they're flying into the bay. Right?
Oh, but that's Acapulco.
Yeah, that's for sure Acapulco. But I don't know if they shot anything else in Acapulco.
Maybe the club, but I'm not sure. It's hard to tell.
Yeah, it is hard to tell. Yeah. But they fly on a romantic trip to Acapulco. They go to like the club, like you said, and it's kind of like a, was it like a bossa nova club, kind of lounge club, something like that.
Then he gets into a fight there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he gets into a fight there.
And so there you go. You know, that kind of comes into play, right? And he goes his romantic side, and then he flips, turns the switch, and he becomes an asshole.
Yeah, he's like a violent asshole to be.
And he just tells you, "You know what? Fuck this. Let's quit the city life and let's move to a cabin in the woods." And she just says, "Yeah, all right, fuck it. Let's do it."
I'm like, damn, this is definitely Troy Donahue.
Yeah, right? And that leads, of course, to a very awkward, like, 10-minute sex scene between...
And she's already pregnant by then, because remember, they're in the cave, remember?
Yeah,
they're, like, exploring the woods, and they go to a cave. And then that's when she's talking about, oh, the baby. And they're like, really? Like, he's all happy. And then that's when they cut to the sex scene. You're like, wait, what? And shouldn't it be the other way first?
And it, I mean, maybe it was intended that way, and they just, in the editing room, they flipped it or something. Who knows?
Because the sex scene is very long.
It's like, it's literally 10 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes long of just them hooking up, like, in the cabin.
It's like, they already made the baby. They're making it again.
And then it just cuts to Kathy giving birth to this baby inside of this cabin, like a home, like a home birth.
Yeah.
So it kind of goes all over the place. And so this is kind of when the movie takes a turn, or like at least begins to kind of turn here, because Kathy ends up, you know, she has the kid or whatever. She takes the kid out to like the river or something.
Yeah, they're just like, you know, having a normal day like always.
Yeah.
Chopping wood, and then she's just playing with the kid.
And then I guess we learn that they're kind of starting to industrialize that area. They're kind of, you know,
they're building roads.
Yeah, building like roads, chopping down a lot of the trees and stuff. And three workers from that crew kind of veer the course and get drunk. And I guess one of those is Raul Fernandez's son, right? The main goon, I guess you could say.
Yeah, the main guy, yeah.
And so they get drunk. They kind of drive off course. They're going to start smoking some weed. And they run into Kathy and this little baby. And they decide, fuck it, we're going to rape her.
Yeah. And it's a pretty nasty scene because they just go at it, you know.
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't want to talk too lightly about, you know, rape scenes and stuff like that. I know people are very sensitive to that topic. Yeah. But if you don't like that kind of violence in movies, or don't want to see it in general, you probably skip that part because it is a pretty gruesome scene.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of Last House on the Left, if anything. It has that vibe to it.
It's very nasty. Yeah, it definitely. And I did see some people kind of say that this movie was like Last House on the Left, which I can see. But yeah, it's definitely a pretty violent and pretty sleazy, rough rape scene. So, you know, please be mindful of that if you're going to watch this movie. And that scene, you know, this rape scene, it lasts like 10 to 15 minutes. It's pretty fucking long. Definitely pads the runtime, and I'm assuming that's why they made it so long and so violent. Mm-hmm. They just needed to get a little bit of runtime on this movie. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so, you know,
so that's happening, and then Daniel, of course, you know, he hears what's going on. He tries to fight those guys. Doesn't work out. They fucking knock him out.
Yeah, they fuck him up.
And then he's like in a frozen state. Like, he's not even like knocked out. He's just like frozen. Like, they hit him in the head or something.
And he's
just like frozen. Like, he's still with his eyes open and shit. Fucking weird too when you see that scene. He's just there.
You know, I think I want to give credit to the filmmakers. I'm going to assume that they did that because of his mental state already, you know, he's kind of already fucked up mentally. But yeah, he does kind of sit there and kind of like freezes up on himself and trying to save his wife and his kid. And then that's when Kathy inexplicably just jumps off the mountain.
Yeah, like, she feels so bad about what happened. And then, of course, I guess she thinks he's dead, you know, too.
Oh, yeah, you know, you're probably right. Yeah.
So then she just goes to the river and, yeah, she just kills herself.
And
the little girl is nowhere to be found. Like, They never really show what happens to the little girl either.
Well, there's like a split second scene where the baby, the little kid, kind of like, I don't know if it like falls or gets thrown or jumps into like the river.
That's right. Yeah.
That's it. You don't really see anything else. You don't see what happens after that. So you kind of have to assume that this baby's dead. Mm-hmm. And, you know, naturally that's going to upset any man watching his wife get raped and murdered, and his baby as well. Mm-hmm. And then that's off, you know, that sets Daniel on his quest for revenge.
Quest for revenge, yeah.
And he does get pretty fucking violent.
Yeah, because at the same time, it's like, okay, he's wandering the woods now on his own.
Yeah.
And it's like anybody he comes across, he just fucking kills him.
Yeah, the first two people he kills had nothing to do with this at all. Mm-hmm. I guess they were part of like the job site. They weren't part of the three men who, you know, raped and ultimately killed his wife.
They're just around there. Like, one guy's just driving his car, and then you see the axe go through the car and kills him. They don't show him killing him, but they, you know, they insinuate he got chopped up.
I will say that's kind of the one point of the movie that I thought was kind of a letdown was that they don't show him actually. All the kills are off screen.
They're all off screen, yeah.
Which, I mean, I don't know if that was like a producer demand or what, but I think the movie kind of would have benefited a little bit from showing.
They would have more showing him,
yeah. Because you kind of, I mean, you obviously we know, you know, he's axing these fools up, but you don't. You never see it, but you see the violence against his wife. So you're like hoping, all right, I want to see this guy really, you know, really fuck these fools up. And he kills them, but we don't get the real payoff, I think. Yeah. And maybe that's just me, you know, my own violent tendencies. Yeah.
No, I felt the same way too. But it was still pretty good though. Like the scenes that build up to the killings, they're still really good.
Yeah, I mean, like we said, like he's stalking them in the woods. Mm-hmm.
Like the scene that I really like was when he's stalking the little boy. That was
it was pretty brutal.
Yeah, you're like freaked out for this little kid. You know? Yeah, because the kid's just there playing or whatever.
And has no idea what's happening or why he's being chased or anything. Yeah, this fucking madman in the woods.
Exactly.
And I mean, I guess it's pretty like he. He uses the elements of the woods to his advantage. Mm. You know, he ends up using his axe to chop down a couple of trees to block the roadway.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So that the guys can't, you know, drive off or drive away from him. Yeah. And he kind of traps them in his own, whatever little section of the woods them in. And, so he goes out. He's finally, after killing the two uninvolved people.
Yeah, he finds all.
He
three
finds
of them.
The three of the rapists in their little truck driving. I don't know if they were driving away from the work site or what, but he catches them.
Yeah, he manages to get to them, and yeah, they all meet their demises one way or another.
Tendremos que hacerlo nosotros.
Sí, y antes de que llueva.
And then the Texas Chainsaw Massacre sound effect comes in. You know, that chin or whatever.
We'll play it right now. Yeah, actually, I when that happened, I was like, oh, I remember you telling me that they had stole like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre soundtrack. Like, and I was like, I don't hear this. Yeah. I don't. And then finally it showed.
Kill, that's when they start playing it more. And the guy's just laughing to Raul Fernandez's character. He's just like laughing. I was like, damn, this is fucking crazy.
And so he finally gets his revenge. He kills all three of the guys, right? Mm. And then it skips forward in time a couple of years, I would assume,
something
right?
Like that, yeah.
And we learn that Daniel's been living in the caves and in the forest over there, kind of just living off the land. You know, this fucking bearded, disgusting looking Bigfoot dude.
That's typical Troy Donahue look right there. it was a wig, obviously, and prosthetic.
Oh, yeah.
But it was like, this is still Troy Donahue style by that time.
And then we learn that the daughter survived. She didn't actually die when they show her falling into the lake. She I guess, went upriver and was saved by none other than
the hunter.
The hunter from the beginning of the movie.
The student.
The student. What was his name? Roger or something like that? I can't remember. I wish I would have wrote it down. I completely forgot.
I don't remember.
But
Roger.
Yeah, Roger.
No, not Roger. Hank, I think.
Hank?
I think Hank.
I can't remember his name.
He had like an American name, obviously. Yeah.
But so he's now with Laura, the other girl in class from the beginning of the class.
They're now married.
They're now married.
And they've adopted the little girl.
Because while he was on a hunting trip, he found this girl by the riverbanks and was like, oh, we got to save this girl. But Laura's pissed off. She wants a kid of her own. She kind of resents this fool for caring more about this, you know, feral child that they found instead of having their own child.
Sí. ¿Cuánto ha cambiado?
Sí. Ya hasta comienza a parecerse a él. Oye, cambiemos el tema.
Laura, ya me cansé de oír la misma cosa una y otra vez.
Pobrecita. Por favor, Laura, no seas así. Debías alegrarte de tener a Claudia. Además, algún día tal vez tú y él lleguen a tener hijos propios.
Sí, es verdad. Supongo que es porque le pone más atención a ella que a mí, Mary.
Bueno, eso es duro. Pero Ed hizo lo correcto al adoptarla.
¡Hey, Ed!
¿Dónde dices que la encontraste? ¿Mm? Ahí abajo, junto al río. Estaba inconsciente, y cuando me di cuenta que seguía viva, le di respiración artificial y despertó.
La trata como si realmente fuera su padre.
¿Y por qué no? Además de ti, es todo lo que él tiene. Laura, tu actitud con esa niña no es natural.
No, they're having like a picnic or something at the riverbank.
Yeah.
And she kind of skirtles off a little bit and runs into Troy Donahue.
Troy Donahue.
He's been in the woods the whole time. He's just been waiting and waiting. And he realizes that it's, oh, shit, that's my daughter. Mm-hmm. And so he
takes her back to the
takes
kid,
her back, yeah.
And then, you know, we get a sappy, sad ending from there.
It's, yeah, so he takes the kid and they think he just child abducted this little girl. Mm-hmm. And turns out that they shoot him. The hunter shoots him. He's not a fake hunter anymore.
He did a kind of a good thing. He got rid of the killer that was stuck in the woods.
But I guess so.
At the same time, he killed a man that was, you know, driven to this, you know.
And I think that's like, and I would like to hope that it was by design that this movie kind of feels like two different types of movies, because the main character obviously has this, you know, disability. I don't know if disability is the right word, but you know, he has this mental issue where he kind of flips, right? He's like good and bad.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe that's just me trying to be Siskel and Ebert and read a little deeper into the movie, but
no, it feels like it is like a deep movie. It's not just like a hack'em, you know, rape revenge type of movie. There is more to it than that.
Yeah.
That was the thing about this movie.
A
bit silly at times too, but you know.
Yeah, you could say that.
Yeah.
But I think overall, I think people would enjoy this movie. I know it kind of got blasted on Letterboxd. People weren't really fucking with this movie, but yeah. I thought it was pretty decent. Like I said, it's only 73 minutes, so it's not like you're wasting a lot of your... You're not watching a fucking three-hour Marvel movie and hating it, you know?
It's funny because one of the endings... I mean, the ending that I showed, that I have in my copy doesn't have it, but there is an ending where it says, after everything's over, there's like a cut scene, and there's like a text that says, "The ultimate rape is the tortured brain."
Oh shit! Yeah, I don't remember seeing that.
But I know in other copies that I've seen before, it has that text on the at the end. It's like, "The ultimate rape is the tortured brain."
Interesting.
And it's like, oh, that's interesting.
Philosophical assholes.
They went, yeah.
Damn. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I guess that explains the.
You know, his tortured brain, you know, was, you know, raped too.
Yeah, I guess it's a human. I don't know what the word it is I'm looking for, but.
But yeah, it's a interesting movie for so many reasons. Obviously, for one, I feel It's very serious, yeah. Even though it's very silly at times.
Uh-huh.
But it does have a very serious tone to it, kind of like Last House on the Left, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It has that same vibe. It's like, hey, you know, we meet these characters, we kind of like them, but then when something fucked up happens, you're like, fuck, that sucks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I want something bad happen to these bad characters.
Yeah.
Which does happen. And then, yeah, like I said, the scenes with the killer. I mean, obviously Daniel, you know, hunting, you know, people or whatever, killing them.
Yeah.
Felt like a slasher almost. The POV scenes, the scenes with the axe and everything.
There is one scene that I wrote down in my notes that it's almost like a Friday the 13th ripoff, where I think it's part 5, I think, when there's a shot where it's like you're looking from underneath the car and all you see is the axe and, yeah. and Jason's feet walking by.
There we go. Yeah, that scene with the final kills.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's part 5, Friday the 13th, part 5. Maybe, I don't know. Somebody correct us, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot. I don't know if I liked it as much as Chacal, mm-hmm. but I do think that this movie kind of. It serves a purpose, right? I mean, it's like you said, it's kind of like a Mexican proto slasher.
Yeah, and it predates all the slashers too. When I think about it, at first I kept thinking, oh, this takes a lot of inspiration from Halloween, but keep in mind, Halloween is 78. This is 76, 77.
I mean, I guess people would argue that Black Christmas would be like the first slasher.
Yeah. So yeah, I would think, you know.
But I mean, then, it's if anything, you know, the worst that this can possibly be labeled as is an early slasher, if not a proto slasher. Yeah. So, I mean, there's merit to watching this movie. I mean, again, if you're not into, you know, sex and violence in movies, you know, this, keep in mind that Ultrahead does have a very violent rape scene.
Very
so,
violent, yeah. This is like Spit on Your Grave, Last House on the Left.
Spit on Your Grave. That's a good call out right there. Mm-hmm. I definitely think that's a good comparison.
Even just thinking about Spit on Your Grave, now I'm like, oof.
I know, right?
Dirty.
Damn, you know, I haven't seen that in a long time.
Yeah, me too. But when I think about that movie, every time I'm like, that movie's fucking dirty. It's fucking ugly. You know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how Ultrahead is with that scene. It's really ugly.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess the warning to the viewers would be like, you know, it does have this scene, but like we said, the first like 30 to 40 minutes is like a straight up TV drama. So, if that's not your vibe, then I don't know. But I think it's worth it. I don't know if anyone would ever pick this up to release on a Blu-ray.
It could be. Yeah, it could be.
But
I know people want it. I know that labels have wanted this one before.
So I mean, there you go. So I mean, labels want it. Hopefully eventually this will get released and you guys will be able to pick it up, and I don't know what kind of special features they'll have on this, but
it's online. Like if you Google it hard enough, you'll find it online, and it has that ending with the text or whatever.
Yeah,
very pretty copy, but you know.
Yeah, Chacal is on YouTube, right?
Incomplete
version,
because
it
ends with what is it, when he jumps in the water.
Oh, end it there?
Yeah, and then it's just the end. It's like, somebody edit this.
Why would they? That's like the final scene is like one of the best scenes in the movie.
Yeah, so that's it. It's like, oh, he jumped in the water. That's it. You know?
Wow. Okay, so if you want to watch an incomplete version of Muerte del Chacal, you can watch it on YouTube.
There's like I don't know if I showed you the car. Remember, there's like a guy watching it too in the video.
Yeah.
Like,
that's
he's like kind of like talking over the movie too sometimes.
Yeah, that's it's like a audio commentary, but you actually see the guy's face.
It's
on,
weird. Yeah, it's not even like good. It's just weird. And then the incomplete copy, like I said.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You're gonna have to look hard for that one. But it's on DVD. It came out on DVD a long time ago.
Uh huh.
Expensive now, like if you look on eBay now. Like,
damn, is it really?
Yeah, people try to sell it for like $30 or some shit.
Oh,
like that,
40. I thought you were gonna say like 100, 200.
I mean, there probably are by now.
I mean, people are spending, you know, $80 on shitty movies anyway, so I don't think $30 is too expensive.
Yeah,
but
you know, but it's on DVD, and same thing with Chacal Part 2.
Oh, really? There's a DVD of that, or is it?
Yeah,
a
Masacre. Yeah.
Oh shit, I gotta find those because I actually really fucking love these movies.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know, man. I mean, I guess that's kind of leave it up to the listeners if they want to seek these movies out and watch them. But
yeah, so I'm looking right now on eBay for anybody who cares. Yeah, $29, $39 for a DVD.
Oh, that's not
bad.
Or
a VHS, $40, $35.
Yeah, you know how I feel about VHS.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. If people want to watch it, they can watch it. If not, you know. Listen to the podcast.
Yeah, it's readily available either way. Chacal's readily available.
Are they English friendly versions?
Nah.
So, okay, so yeah. You got to know Spanish, guys.
Yeah, I know Spanish. Damn, yeah. One sold for $39.99.
There you go. See? It's in high demand, yo.
Somebody bought one for $4.30. Wow. Somebody got lucky for $4.
See? Right? So you play your cards right, scour eBay, you'll find a deal on Chacal 1 or Chacal 2. Is Ultraje on a DVD or no? That's just a VHS.
It's been only on VHS, which is on the Isela Vega video line.
Oh, okay.
She used to have her own video company.
Yeah.
So that's the copy I watched, actually, which was actually a bootleg, technically, because a friend of mine, Quentin, by the way, shout out to Quentin. He's the one that actually made the copy for me.
Oh, sick.
With the cover and everything. What's up, Quentin? Yeah, Quentin, yeah. He's actually the one that gave me Chuck All 2, the remake.
Oh, shit,
so,
okay.
Yeah, so again, damn. Shout out to Quentin. Yeah.
Shout out to Quentin.
Quentin. And so like I said, great movies. January Giallo, our little kind of contribution to that.
Yeah, hopefully people can watch this and kind of add it to their January Giallo list or or feature watch list. I don't know, maybe we can do a little collab with Jim or something one day.
I feel like he would love this movie if he saw it.
Yeah, shout out to Jim.
Yeah, he would love this movie.
Let's make that happen. I don't know. We'll reach out
someday,
to him or something.
Like I said,
yeah.
Hopefully one day we'll get this on the big screen too or something. Shit.
And so with that, I guess we'll end it here.
Yeah, we'll end it here. And thanks again for everybody that listens, you know, and shout out to Joey, of course.
What up?
Not Mike. No. I was telling Joey the story about how somebody thought it was Mike. I was like, no, Mike's the other homie. This is Joey.
Hey, you know, it's not bad to be compared to Mike, but I'm not Mike.
Don't worry,
guys.
We'll have Mike on the show again.
Yeah, yeah, Mike, you're coming back soon. Don't worry. You'll get a full episode where we won't have to cut out all the spoilers and everything. So Mike, see it on 16mm. Coming soon again. See some of his programming.
Yeah. And then Jaime, of course. Shout out to Jaime for having us record at his spot again.
Woo-woo. We're out here in West Covina Heights.
He provided me with a Noche Buena beer.
I don't drink, so I don't know.
Bohemia.
It looks good, though.
It is good, though, yeah. But shout out to Jaime, of course.
Don't forget, guys, please rate, subscribe, tell all your theos and theas.
Yeah, give us a subscription, you know. Like, subscribe, rate us. You know,
repost, put it on Instagram, put it everywhere. If you hate us or you like us, any publicity is good publicity, as they say.
That's what I've been saying.
Of course, you can find Armando on Instagram. You guys already know Trash Mix. I'm under Cheddar Brown.
Jaime, Jamie AP.
Woo woo.
Rendezvous is the homies.
Rendezvous coming soon. We're having an event soon, so stay on the lookout for that.
Oh, and then a new website in the works, by the way, new Trash Mix website.
Damn, let them know. Yeah, let them know.
It's going to be coming in. When will we have this episode up? Like another week or two, probably?
Honestly, I'm going to try to have this out on Monday.
Okay, so even sooner.
So by the time you listen to this, the website should be
It'll still be in the works, but
it'll be coming in the next like 2 weeks.
It'll be before the end of the month. So yeah, so new website. This one will have all the new bells and whistles, podcast material.
I've seen like screenshots and little videos
of the website after we're done.
You guys are going to be excited. It looks fucking sick.
Yeah, it's going to be a new cool layout. And of course, like I told Joey, it's going to have more podcast related material. More posts, different kinds of posts. Even have Joey write, hopefully.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe I'll get my pen out and we can get something in.
That's kind of the goal, is to kind of bring in new people into the website.
Yeah,
you know.
So you kind of do like group forums or something.
Nobody does forums. Everyone's on Discord
or Reddit.
I don't think I want to do Discord.
I don't know, man. Discord is weird. I don't know if
I never tried it, but people have met on there and have made friendships and marriages on there.
Damn, on the Discord, goes down in the core.
Apparently, but no Discord.
I'm missing out on my future ex-wife, dog. I got to get on Discord.
Yeah, hey, who knows? Maybe there will be a Trash Mix Discord if we're ever good enough for that. But yeah,
if the fans demand it.
Yeah.
Huh?
But no, yeah, new website coming. And again, keep listening to the podcast. And
please, guys, rate, subscribe, tell everybody, whether you hate us or you love us. Exactly. Just tell people, because they might love us, you might hate us. It's all good, man.
But we're doing pretty good for the most part.
I hope you're having as much fun as
I
am. Yeah. So. We'll see you guys next one.
Whatever.
Next month.
What are we gonna talk about in the next one?
Well, we had an idea, but I don't know if it's gonna gonna happen or not. Yeah, I don't want to spoil. I don't want to spoil it, but
we'll see. But we'll have something up either. Yeah, way. It'll be cool.
And then I think we've mapped out everything for at least half of the year. So
yeah,
we have really good. At least to me, I think the good topics coming up for the foreseeable future. And as always, guys, you know, let us know if you want something.
Yeah, exactly. Or if there's people you guys want us to bring in, hey, we could do it. You know.
Yeah, interviews.
Yeah, because there's a couple people we already mentioned we want to talk with. You know?
Yeah, we just got. It's hard to get scheduling right. You know,
that's another thing. Yeah.
And then you know, if they're international people, it's even harder to get scheduling. You know, so
yeah, exactly.
Tune in. You know, you never know who'll be on the show next. Yeah. So, yeah, man.
Yeah,
peace
thanks
out.
For listening.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Watch out for the killer in the black gloves.
There's a killer on the loose.
Próximamente estrenaremos.
Compadre, no me agarres las tepalcuanas, por favor.
Ay, compadre, no me alcanzo.
No, es con la pura intención basta. Ay, así. Uno, dos, tres. Compadre. No le vayan a jalar la cadena. Compadre, agárrese de las paredes. Perdóneme, compadre.
No sea pendejo, venga para acá, le voy a decir cómo.
A ver. ¿Le ayudo?
Sí, póngase atrás. Abusado, ¿eh?
Sí.
Una.
Ajá.
Dos. Tres.
¡Ay, ay, ay! ¡Ay, ay, ay! ¡Ay, ay, ay! ¡Ay, ay, ay!
¡Cabrones, no dejan!
¡A todas!